Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Hey, this is Trevor from Halifax calling in to say that I support Creative Control on Patreon because I think long-form arts journalism is a crucial part of music culture, and there's simply not enough of it out there today. Vish is a master interviewer, he lands great guests, and he has his finger on the pulse of the ever-changing music landscape both here in Canada and abroad. For all of these reasons and many more, I think you should support Creative Control on Patreon too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. I'm Visha's wife, and I will love him no matter what you do. And now he has me on the record saying that.
Thin end of the wedge, scabby head, crawled under the bench, scabby legs, pigeon on the ledge.
Kate Stables is a gifted songwriter, musician, and singer currently based in Paris, France. Originally from Winchester, England, Stables has led the acclaimed band This Is The Kit for more than 20 years, releasing 6 lovely albums to date, including the band's latest, which was produced by Griff Rees, who is likely best known for his work in Super Furry Animals. The album is called Careful of Your Keepers. It was released on June 9th, 2023 by Rough Trade Records, and it prompted Kate and I to connect in person at a venue called Festival Place in Sherwood Park, located just outside of Edmonton, Alberta, where This Is The Kit played a show recently. Now, a few hours before they hit the stage, Kate and I had a fun talk about things like touring in Canada in the winter, her love of The Simpsons and Despicable Me, and how such pop culture creations sneak their way into her songs. All of the chewing and biting imagery on Careful of Your Keepers and what it made me think of. How repeating something doesn't mean it's not changing all the time. Being parented and parenting. More tour dates, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary and most reliable way for podcasters like me to make a living, and that is currently my primary source of income. So if you can, please support my work on Patreon today. Plus, in-kind support from the likes of Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 840 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and brilliant Kate Stables from This Is The Kit, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Going deep, choosing what to keep, treasure chest, painful letting go. Dice that were unrolled came undone, unraveling the whole. Came undone, breaking of a limb. When you fell, breaking of a branch, so you fell.
Hi, Kate, how's it going?
Good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm well. It's nice to meet you and be in person with someone. I haven't done this in so long.
Yeah, it's really nice.
I usually do remote things. Yeah, welcome to Alberta.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Have you been here before?
Yes, but in summer. We played at Calgary and Edmonton folk festivals.
Yes.
And it was a very different sky and weather conditions and ground.
Touring in the winter in February is daunting at the best of times.
Yeah,
you coming to Canada as well.
A bit foolhardy, maybe. I mean, when our sort of booking agent proposed it, I did sort of think, are you sure? But I think it's all right. So far, so good.
Anything notable about this trip? How many Canadian dates have you done?
This will be the second.
Okay.
And then we've got two more coming up soon after we've done a bit of the States. And then we'll come back for Toronto and Montreal.
Yeah.
But this particular run, notable. Well, it's just pretty exciting to be in Canada because we don't come as often. You know, it's always sort of like one or two dates with a US tour. So it's nice to sort of do three or four this time instead.
Do you have a particular affinity for Canada? Do you like Canada? Do you know much about Canada?
I don't think I know much about it, but I do like it. I guess we've all got our own sort of pre-constructed romantic ideas about different countries.
Yeah.
And Canada is one that particularly sort of fascinates me, and just northern places I like.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, exciting land and exciting to be here, and it's a different type of person you meet, I guess, as well.
Are you shocked when you see that we have your royalty on our money? The British royalty, I should say.
Well, I feel a bit guilty.
Yeah.
I feel bad, yeah.
We are, I'm joking, of course, but yes, we are somehow still, you know, we were a colony, we still have some British roots.
Still got some residue
to scrape
off.
It's a bit strange probably to see your people on our money.
Well, I don't think of them as my people, but I know what you mean, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad the tour is going well. Congratulations on this. I say new, this record's been out since the fall, is that correct?
Since June, even, actually.
June. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
I know, we started touring in the fall, but it came out in June, and so, yeah, we've been trotting it around for a while now.
So you've had a lot of time to process this record since it's been out. You've probably talked to people like me who are teaching you things about the record
in a way. That's true.
Anything particularly illuminating for you in that process and also in playing the songs live?
Let me dig back, because it's true that it's been a while since I've done, like, you know, when it's like promo week or whatever, and it's intensive interviews, you're like sort of, oh, wow, yeah, that question. Oh, yeah, I really hadn't thought about that song. But now I've got to dig up all the sort of epiphanies that have happened since the album's come out. But I can't think of anything in particular, but it is true that it's always an interesting, like, there's writing the songs, then you sort of discover them a bit more when you're working them out with a band.
Yeah.
Then you discover more things that you didn't realize about them when you record them. And then when you start like touring them, that's when it really, you know, like dots start getting joined up when you're singing them sort of live and you're like sort of, oh, that bit and that bit and that joins together there. You know, it's quite interesting. It's investigation of my own brain by a very sort of circuitous route.
Are you someone who tends to write your records in a batch? Or are you like pulling songs from like, oh yeah, 5 years ago I tried a thing and it didn't work, I'm going to try to squeeze it in?
Yeah, a little bit of that. I guess mainly it's batch by batch because... But I do have, leftover bits and bobs that get carried over and then make it into a song. Yeah. And there's certain lines and ideas that I've been sort of bubbling up in my notebooks for years and then they'll eventually find a home and then... But yeah, I don't write all the time. I can only write when I'm not on tour.
Right.
so that makes it quite batchy.
Okay.
But yeah, there are definitely things that I sort of think about for years before they then appear in a song.
Would you characterize this album as being that kind of, I don't want to say hodgepodge because that sounds disparaging.
No.
But I agree. Kind of temporal, like grabbing from the past and also writing currently?
It is a little bit, but maybe less so than the other albums, I would say. There's definitely one, there's a sort of line stolen from an episode of The Simpsons.
Choo choo choo?
Yeah, is in this album that I've definitely been like meaning to put into a song for years, probably since like the first time I saw that episode.
Yes.
So like that's kind of finally found its home. But other than that, it feels like it was of a particular time, this album, I think.
Yeah.
But I also am someone that's prone to having certain thoughts on quite a cyclical basis.
Yeah.
So things that I was thinking about 5 years ago bubble up again, but in a slightly different way.
I feel like you're a pop culture sort of aficionado, perhaps, maybe.
Oh, I don't know about that. What do you mean by pop culture?
The Simpsons, reference The Simpsons.
Yeah, I keep quoting loads of like.
But today, just this morning, I come downstairs. I'm the third last person in my family to make it down to the kitchen for breakfast. And my daughter, who's 9, and my wife are already there.
Yeah.
My daughter's got Minions on.
And spotted.
Yes. So I says to my wife, I says, you know, I was reading up on this new album by this is the kid. And I feel like Kate has an affinity for Gru. Something Gru said. Is that correct?
I do love Gru. And I just love it when he says light bulb.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And my daughter says to me after the light bulb scene today, Papa, do you know that light bulbs, we say that light bulbs represent good ideas because the light bulb itself was such a good idea. And I say, no, I never heard that before. Where did you hear that? And she says, YouTube.
Great.
So,
I'd never heard that as well.
Well, you know about the light bulb
over
the head.
I know that it's a good idea. It's, you know, the universal symbol for I've had a good idea.
Yeah.
But I didn't know it's because light bulbs
were
such a good
according
idea.
According to my daughter, who is 9 and watches YouTube, that's what it is.
Yeah,
so,
well, why not?
So things like I caught the choo choo choos me.
Yeah.
And then it made me think because I started watching The Simpsons when I was, I guess I must have been 12 years old. It came out around 1989.
Uh-huh.
And so I've lived with that show for a long time, but have not been paying attention to it.
Yeah.
And then I made the Minions connection, or Despicable Me, I guess.
Yeah.
You are a cartoon person at least.
I didn't think I was, but since the past sort of couple of albums have made me realize that I am. And it's
you
quite
like animation, yeah.
Like, I think, or maybe it's just, it's not necessarily, I don't know. It's true, I keep accidentally sort of quoting cartoons, but there's also other stuff that I sort of steal from which isn't cartoons but that is kind of, you know, stuff on the telly.
Right.
So I guess I wonder, it's funny, I've realized that about myself, that there are certain cartoons I really love.
Cartoons is one thing. What else on the telly? Is it British stuff, American stuff? Can you think of stuff you've cribbed from?
Yeah, I do like British stuff. Well, I can, a particular bit of thievery that I can think of is from...
I wasn't sent here to investigate you, by the way.
No,
this
I'm
is
just
not...
This is like...
Yeah, okay.
I'm voluntarily confessing this. Was from the 90s, the BBC 90s rendition or whatever of Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, with Colin Firth?
With Colin Firth, exactly. Yeah. It was his sort of breakthrough role, I guess.
Yeah. And Mr. Darcy, as
Mr.
I recall.
Mr. Darcy, exactly. Yes. And then in one of my songs, I steal a line from Mrs. Bennett.
Mrs. Bennett. Okay. Yeah. Do you remember the line?
I do, yeah, but I don't like telling people about it because I like it when they find it for
Figure
themselves.
Figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you throw in, as I recall, if memory serves, I've not seen this Simpsons episode in a long time. It's Ralph Wiggum.
It's Ralph Wiggum. It is Lisa Simpson feeling bad because no one's given Ralph a Valentine's card. Yeah. And so she decides to give him one to be friendly.
Right.
And it's the I choose you. And then you've got to face the then Lisa has to face the consequences of like winning Ralph's heart.
His affection. Yeah. So in that dynamic, and this might seem like a tangent, but I like that it's also germane.
Yeah.
In that dynamic, do you relate more to Ralph Wiggum or Lisa Simpson?
That's a good question.
Well,
Lisa Simpson.
Lisa.
Yeah, I think Lisa. Because I don't feel sad if I don't have a Valentine's card, but I would feel sad if I felt like someone else was sad because they didn't have a Valentine's card.
Okay. So it's the empathy of the situation that speaks to you.
I think so, yeah.
Can you relate to Ralph or Lisa in that? You say Lisa, so clearly you have a bit of Lisa in you. And by the way, for those who have not seen this show, The Simpsons, it's been on a long time. It's a cultural institution.
It is true.
Lisa is, at least still, I haven't followed the show in some time, but for a long time, Lisa was kind of the moral center of the show.
Yeah.
And represented the progressive sort of, whenever the writers wanted to tackle like a progressive or political issue, Lisa was involved.
Yeah, that's true.
I will say growing up, and as much as I'm most aligned with Lisa, I found those episodes to be a little bit more of a drag.
What, the moral ones?
Yeah.
Kind of, but the Malibu Stacy episode is pretty good.
Yes, and predates the whole Barbie situation quite a long time.
Yeah.
So Lisa as a character on this, I don't know, all of us thought Homer was interesting because he was dumb, but he seemed to get away with it.
Yeah. And he's just sort of touchingly, it's touching how sort of, just how he is.
Yes.
You know, there is like part of, we all have a bit of Homer Simpson in us.
Yes, I think that's true. And hopefully we have a little bit of Lisa in us. So
if we're lucky.
When you grab that line from that episode, that's for the Simpson heads, probably, on some level.
Anyone that grew up in the 90s.
Is there any other, because that's a Valentine's Day card. I mean, some of us can relate to it for other reasons, but to you, you put this out there. Are you like, let's see if the Simpsons people catch this? Or what are you thinking when you do that?
Yeah, I mean, a part of it is a fun game of see who can find the Mrs. Bennett quote from Pride and Prejudice or whatever.
Right.
But mainly that line I just loved as soon as I heard it and just thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
And, I've been wondering about a way of using it in a song for years. And then, I just found myself... And then it just sort of was exactly the right line for this song that I was writing that was talking about chewing. So it's not a train song. It's not a choo-choo train song. It's chewing song.
Right. So there's chewing and biting comes up a lot on this record.
Yeah.
And I want, before I dive into, I know you've done a lot of press and you haven't thought about these things probably in a while because the record's been out a while.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to this record and I was pondering what you were singing about and the biting and the chewing. And I have a very specific thing that it conjures something for me.
Okay.
But I'm curious if you can first, before I launch into this.
Okay.
Can you talk about why you think biting, chewing in particular, something about that thing that we do, all of us do, all animals do.
Yeah.
When you ponder the narrative voice on this record, who is doing the chewing? Who is doing the biting? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, I guess it depends who is doing the singing of the song.
Right.
Who the words are coming from. And I feel like that varies quite a lot song to song. And
it does.
And I'm also a big believer in the opposite always being true, or more than one truth being true.
Mm.
So sometimes it sounds like it's, I don't know, main person in the story saying it.
Yeah.
But actually, I also believe that it's more peripheral people that are involved in the situation, or maybe just an external voice rather than an internal voice. Yeah, I don't know. It's tricky.
So even if someone is speaking in the first person, you think that that could be the narrative itself is almost someone observing that person?
Yeah, or I think more often I find myself thinking someone's talking about someone in this. Do I mean second or third person? I mean third person.
Third person, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. And quite often I hear people using third person and I think, oh, you're talking about yourself,
yes,
aren't you? So I feel like that is what my brain sort of does.
Yeah.
And But yes, I can't, again, I've forgotten what the original question was.
Well, I framed it as me wanting to launch into my own thoughts about who these voices, where they were coming from.
Yeah.
So my question was basically about these narrative voices. At one point, there is a song, I guess, about a pigeon.
Yeah. Or maybe even two pigeons.
Perhaps two pigeons.
Yeah.
And there's references to their scabby heads and legs and stuff like that. Here's what I'm thinking, and I don't know if it's because I'm a parent who likes animals, but when I first started to hear, when this record sort of kicks off, the economy of the language, like there's a lot of repetition. There's not a lot of language. It made me think, first of all, of dogs.
Oh, cool.
And I thought there was some dog stuff going on. I don't know what that means. And then the second thing was babies.
Okay.
People who are trying to figure, biting, teething, like there's that
it's
kind of thing.
It's true that is a, that is quite a significant developmental sort of stage. And I feel like I remember when my daughter was a baby, I remember having quite strong similar urges. Like I remember when she, like before she was on solids, I just wanted to like, whenever she was nursing, I would just want to be drinking through a straw. I mean, obviously that's not the same thing as
you wanted to
nursing.
Relate to her?
No, I didn't want to relate to her. I just physically had the urge to.
Oh.
I was just like, give me a drink and give me a straw now.
A straw specifically?
Yeah,
though.
Like I wanted to. It was quite funny and just, you know, and you notice them putting things in their mouths. And I also noticed that I wanted to be putting things in my mouth, in my one mouth.
In your one mouth. But physiologically, there obviously that's a major sensation.
Yeah, I feel like humans need it. We're sort of mouthy creatures.
Okay, so, but there's clawing at things on the record. And like like I say, there's a song that, I mean, I believe they're even referenced as pigeons. What about animals? What about pets?
It's true that I'm interested in your dog idea.
Okay.
Because I'd never thought about that before. But it's true. There could be some doggy elements. And I feel like, I was born in the year of the dog.
The year of the dog?
Yeah.
What is that year? I don't even know.
82.
Oh, okay.
That's water the year dog.
Okay.
And I do really love dogs. And I've been thinking recently about how, and this also makes me think about your babies comment. Because I don't know if this is wise for me to share this, but the other day I realized that when I see someone walking by with like a pushchair or pram with a baby in it, it makes me feel quite anxious and worried for the future.
Oh.
But when I see someone walking past with a dog, it makes me feel really like hopeful for the future.
The dog.
The dog, yeah.
The dog has a more limited lifespan than the child, actually. And the dog will do very little to contribute to society.
Maybe that's what's reassuring. Oh. I don't know. I just feel so bad for the kid that's going to have to grow up and be a human. And I feel so grateful to the dog for being so loving and in the moment.
I see. So the dog has this finite life.
As we all do.
I guess, yes. But we don't like to think of ourselves as having these finite lives until we absolutely have to, probably.
I think I like thinking about it.
You do?
I think about it quite a lot, yeah.
Why is that?
Don't know. I guess maybe it's good. Maybe I'm sort of trying to test to see if I've got an okay relationship with death.
Have you resolved this? Do you feel like you do?
I think it's probably an ongoing work in progress thing for everyone. But yeah, it's the sort of thing I poke at occasionally and think about.
Is there death on this album?
Yes.
Okay.
But not as much as on the one before.
Right. So did something...
Did something die?
Did something or someone prompt you to ponder that? Sorry,
guess, I feel like I've accidentally led this down this path.
Not at all.
With my babies and dogs.
No. I mean, that's a good... I never really thought about this before, but because my thing that I often observe when you're walking down the street is if someone is pushing a baby carriage and you feel comfortable, you might say, oh, hello, how are you? How's it going? Oh, how's this person? How's the little person doing? Then you depart.
Yeah.
I have found that when a person and a dog are coming towards me, you go, hey, little buddy, how's it going? Oh, you're a good little boy. And then you don't say anything to the person and you just keep walking. That's a weird thing we have.
Kind of, but I don't think I do that. I think I talk to the dog owner. And I think possibly
I have done both, but my friend and I, this actually happened as we were walking away. I said, did you notice that neither of us said anything to the person? He's like, yeah, that was a bit odd. So anyway, there's some relationship we have with the innocence of the dog and the innocence of the baby.
Maybe, yeah.
And the adult doesn't have anything to
do. Yeah, they're just the sort of, you know, bearer.
Yes.
But I think, yeah, I think more often I find myself communicating with the kid and not the parent.
Yeah.
You know, because often it's like they're on a shoulder in front of you in the queue. The parent can't see you and you can just have a bit of a goofy time with the kid.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But like, so the first couple of songs on this record are Goodbye Bite and Inside Outside.
Yeah.
And why they made me think of, I think it may be obvious. Actually, here's a weird conflation. Dogs and babies.
Yeah.
Probably have a similar relationship with these two songs and these two ideas of being, I was inside, now I'm outside. I want to be in the other place almost always. I think dogs in particular, we, you know, depending on your situation, your dog spends all its time inside. Can't wait to get outside. Just wants to be outside all the time. Do you have a dog? Do you have an animal?
No, I don't. No, I don't think. No, I live in a very small situation and I go on tour all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't want to buy industrial meat.
Right, of course. Okay. So have you ever had a pet?
I used to have a lot of guinea pigs when I was growing up because they just ate grass. And 10 years ago, whatever, my daughter had a couple of rats and they were lovely.
Rats and guinea pigs?
Yeah.
No ethical quandary there?
I mean, yeah, there's always ethical quandary with with having pets. I mean, definitely.
Yeah.
But that's part of the learning experience of having them and, you know, it's one of the things. I mean, there's an ethical quandary about everything. Look at this. I've got a disposable fork.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I've been thinking about it more that when my wife, we have two kids, and when my wife and I had started having conversations about having children in like the early to mid part of the first decade of the century.
Yeah.
I said, you know, like,
is it responsible?
Is it
for them? Like,
is it responsible for the planet to have children? Like, everything I'm reading says no.
Yeah.
But then we went ahead and did it anyway. And it's, I couldn't imagine life without them.
Yeah. But, and it's always better that those people are in the world. But it's true that beforehand, it's a big question.
Yeah.
And now you get people like Macron in France who are trying to like encourage French people to have babies to reinforce the economic whatever, and it sort of feels a bit gross.
Well, and yes, and I think there's also, I don't want to get too whatever, but when you think about Mormons or Christians or whoever that want to breed more people like them.
Just back in the day mentality, isn't
it? Yeah.
It's just sort of.
Right. Whereas economically, most people I know who are younger are like, I'll never own a car, I'll never own a house, I'll never have kids.
Yeah.
Because of the financial implications, the economic implications, not even, let alone the ecological ones.
Yeah, exactly, let alone the ecological ones. We saw it, this is pretty unrelated, but I'm going to say anyway, on the bus on the way here today, we drove past like a daycare center. I'm sorry, this is not going to be, I hope this is going to be, anyway, whatever, I'll try and get it and done with.
Go.
And it said, I don't know, Sunny Times Daycare or whatever. And then it said, childcare, space, but at what cost? And then it said, call 751 something.
That's weird. What is that even going to, what are you going to accomplish calling that number? That made no sense.
But I think they didn't realize what they were doing when they put that on the on the sign. They can't have known what, but at what cost means.
Yes.
Or it was a joke. Or it was just a really clever way of getting me to just think about their sign.
Childcare, but
day.
At what cost in the current landscape is a very interesting question
to
pose.
Yeah, it's a total thesis title.
But they meant to say, how much does it cost, I guess? That's really...
Yeah, if you want to know how much it costs, call this number.
Oh, my God.
Instead of like...
That is really... So did you have these quandaries yourself before you had a child?
What sort of quandaries?
The ones about...
Childcare.
No. Yeah, what cost? This is, well, I mean, yeah, there's that part of it too. But just the notion of like, what am I bringing into this world?
Yeah.
Is it actually good for the planet to have more people? Because I've had, we're starting to see that in Western culture, we just seem to keep having children and there's not a lot of space for them or us. And the planet is, this was not meant to be a depressing conversation. I'm just, this is the reality of the situation.
Turning into a phone call with my dad.
You're not the first to say that I remind someone of their dad. No. All I was going to talk about was dogs and liking to be outside and inside and children and how maybe it was a weird conflation for me because I was suggesting that small babies and animals are maybe very similar, and they bite things, and they need to taste things and to feel a part of society or something, or loved or whatever. But now we're, we're into this thing. I mean, you say you wouldn't have a dog. You said you were intrigued by my dog thing. So it hadn't occurred to you.
No, I hadn't thought about dogs. I mean, there's nothing about babies or kids in that album either.
No.
But,
I mean, it's called, what's it called? The album is called
Careful of Your Keepers.
Which I thought, okay, I think I'm onto something here. Who needs a keeper? Usually an animal, a pet, but also, I mean, your parents are kind of initially anyway. It's a horrible way of putting it.
It's true. I guess the main way that children might be in this album is that elders, I think, are in this album.
Yeah.
And I guess where there are elders, there are youngers, and youngers are just the next generation. But no kids or dogs consciously went into the album. But but I love that they're in there for you.
They are in there for me. And I alluded to the fact that I hear, and I don't know if you would, how you would speak to this, your approach to the lyrics on this record.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, I hear a lot of repetition. Is that on purpose? Is that
That's what I do. I'm a repetitive person.
Yeah.
And I like the way that things change when you repeat them. And I guess this is a kind of, this is almost, so many things that are called childlike, I feel like are actually just human-like. It's just actually what humans do.
Right.
But I feel like that thing of just repeating something and changing the emphasis and just seeing how the meaning and the sound changes for you, I feel like it's not the same every time, even though it's the same thing getting said every time.
There's a certain insistence when someone repeats themselves.
Yeah, it sort of, it changes it when you, how many times you say something.
Yeah.
And so there's that, there's the sort of, just the way it sounds, the musicality of like words and phrases, of certain words and phrases, and just how it feels to say it in your mouth. Like that's actually something that is quite, has a big influence on what I write. It's like, will I enjoy speaking or singing this? And so that happens. But yeah, repetition.
How old is your daughter?
She'll be 17 in a few weeks.
Oh, 17. Mm. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say that my kids are 12 and 9.
Yeah, that's
and,
nice.
And we end up talking about repeating ourselves.
Yeah.
And what tends to happen, I don't know if you have this in your history, talking to your child, but you'll say, hey, can you go pick up the thing over there, please? And they'll say, yeah. And then you'll come back and you'll be like, hey, can you pick up that thing? You didn't pick up the thing. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, right, I'll do it. By the third one I have found, my voice is a little louder.
Yeah, exactly. It changes with repetition.
It changes. I'm saying the same thing, but it's a little louder.
Yeah.
And what I've tried to explain them when I, because I don't want to be upset with my kids about something stupid like, did you pick up that thing?
Yeah.
What I've said to them is the reason people repeat themselves and their voice, or rather the reason people's voices rise is because they don't feel like they're being heard.
Yeah, they're feeling like,
And so when you are rattled, upset with each other, I think it's, you think about it, it's because you don't feel like you're being listened to.
Yeah.
So there's, I'm drawing maybe a parallel that isn't present in these songs. I don't know that you say that your things change as you repeat them.
I think so, yeah. And your experience of saying them and of hearing them changes. And one of the things I realized since making the album, someone sort of introduced me to the idea of, I don't know the exact title, but it's something, it's like the Gestalt paradoxical theory of change or something like that, or theory of paradoxical change or something like that, whereby things not changing, they will change
inherently
and just like by sort of giving in to, like, instead of like trying to change something about you or yourself, you're just constantly like, why do I do that? I've got to stop doing that. I've got to stop being like that. If you just sort of go, oh, that's what I'm like, then it will end up changing. And I feel like I really recognize that in myself and in a lot of the writing on the album.
So do you, what I tried to do is just now is frame how repeating oneself is a, It can reflect a communication breakdown of some kind. Like, I've had to keep saying the same thing to you, and you're not hearing me.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to say it until you hear me, basically. Do you find that in this approach to putting a song together, you're dealing with communication in some way? Like, I mean, sorry. When you're writing a song and you're singing a song, you are communicating.
Yeah.
Do you think you're saying something about communicating by repeating yourself so much?
I don't think so. Not knowingly, not yet. Like, in 24 hours, that what your suggestion might have percolated through, and I might sort of go, oh, yes, I see what you mean. But I don't think so, not off the first.
So I can catch up with your tour bus and we can have a follow-up interview just to make sure that you're like, I thought about what you said and now I have an answer that's going to be great.
We're on a Red Arrow bus. We don't have a tour bus.
Oh, you're in the Red Arrow. Okay. Sorry, I didn't know that. Well, whatever. I'll catch up.
So that's easy to get on that.
Okay. Yeah, we can go together. I apologize for doing, you know, maybe a rudimentary psychoanalysis of it. I'm just trying
it's good
to,
fun.
Well, I'm trying to figure it out because I feel like when someone, particularly those who are with an animal, with a dog, they become accustomed to a few phrases.
Yeah, it's true.
Whatever, commands or whatever. But then foods to eat, dinner time, they know it. Like the, we're going for a walk, you know. Have you heard of the thing where people can't say the word walk to a dog? They have to spell it out.
Yeah.
That's a communication thing. The animal figures it out. And children and babies are kind of the same as they start communicating.
I mean, we all are, all just learn the communication tricks and we don't even realize it. Yeah. And quite often it's just the tune of a phrase that we understand more than actually the words.
Yeah.
And we just say stuff that's kind of meaningless, like, oh, I don't even know. I can't think of an example. But, you know, quite often we just make a praising noise at someone and put whatever words in that don't sort of mean anything.
The melodic tone of our voice is meant to convey as much as that.
Which is nice, which is what, you know, humans are sort of musical creatures. And that is a way of communicating. And I feel like quite often words can get in the way of us communicating because we're constantly like focused on talking and reading and writing and speaking. But this, like, that might just be sort of quite a small percentage of how we communicate as humans. Like, there's so much that we do with our bodies or our energy, or just, you know, there's a lot going on, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, thanks for listening to Creative Control. As always, as you may have heard me mention, I recently lost my day job, and I've had a few conversations with people since who've said, you had a day job? I thought your podcast was your day job. When I explained why it hasn't been my day job to a friend, he suggested I should share some of this information with people like you listening right now. So, in short, unless they have some giant exclusive million-dollar contract, podcasters are not paid to make stuff by companies like Apple and Spotify. Podcasters do not make any money from streaming royalties. Ad revenue is dependent on a certain threshold of downloads each month, and even if your show is accessed 30,000 times a month, the income you get is actually really minimal. So podcasters like me usually make time in our lives to support our communities and our interests to make these shows, and our most reliable source of income for this work is in fact crowdfunding. In my case, it's my Patreon. So if you'd like to receive ad-free episodes earlier than everyone else, regular newsletters and blog posts, bonus audio content, and support my work, quite literally, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
The marriage of lyrics and music for any musician can be a fascinating one. Given what we were talking about, I couldn't help but marvel at some of the arrangements here, and they're kind of hypnotic quality. The drumming, I'm a drummer.
Oh, nice.
I was a drummer when I was younger, and I haven't been
playing. You're still a drummer.
I have the drum kit, and my son and I have started playing a little bit together. But my point is this. The drumming really is great, for one thing. Not to highlight one instrument, but it drives the songs in particular ways, and some of the parts are really busy.
Yeah.
But it creates this hypnotic quality along with your singing. Can you talk about the relationship between your phrasing as a lyricist and your this idea we've been talking about, repeating yourself, and how it might relate to the music, like how those two things live together?
Yeah, I guess all of us in the band are quite into sort of droney, trancey, repetitive music of some form or another. And so we sort of naturally sort of get drawn to that sort of play and exploration in music, I think.
Yes.
And then in terms of the lyrics and the repetition and the music, I guess one thing might be that it's just when I'm sort of playing the song and it's not yet finished, you kind of have to fill the space where there's going to be singing.
Yeah.
And you end up just repeating yourself.
Yeah.
And then sometimes that just gets set and it's just like, oh, it makes sense that I say that again there or this many times or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting one, but it's sort of, it's true that Jamie's drumming is, well, I've just never really met anyone or heard anyone else that drums like him.
Yeah.
And it's quite difficult. Lucien, our drummer on this tour, he does a great job of playing Jamie's parts.
Yeah.
But it's not obvious and it's quite hard. And he plays open and he does sort of funny, unorthodox things that other drummers who have been like taught how to play drums can't do very easily.
Yeah.
And Rosie said a nice thing once. What did she say? She said, no one dares to groove like Jamie Whitby Goals. And it's nice because he does.
It's very
really grooves.
Yeah, and it can be a little martial, like almost like a like an off-kilter march or something, and lots of fills, right? And
it's funny, I don't think of Jamie as a filler, but you're right, maybe that on this album there's a few fills.
Well, roles at least, like
yeah,
there are
yeah,
songs.
He's
rolly.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
lots of roles. And
he's a real, like, for me, what I love about Jamie's drumming is the kind of, and what I always look for in making a song, like with all the parts, is that it feels like a sort of oiled, coggy machine that's just like sort of trundling along in a nicely oiled way.
Yeah.
That is what I really enjoy being in.
So in terms of the evolution of your writing in This Is The Kid,
mm-hmm.
let's talk about this record. Are you someone who brings what you feel is a fully formed song to your collaborators? Or is it like, I have loose ideas, can we get together and try to figure them out? I'm trying, even based on just what we were just talking about, I'm not sure if it's
which
one or the
one?
Other.
Well,
yeah.
I feel like usually it's bring a fully formed song. Like, I feel like, for a few different reasons, partly because I want to feel like I can play a song on my own without the band and it still feel like a song.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why I like to finish the song first. And also another reason is that it makes me really nervous playing new songs to the band. Like, it's sort of, I find it much more scary than playing a new song to an audience for, I guess, obvious reasons. So the way I end up playing new songs to the band usually is I just will play them at gigs, because that way I don't have to look at their faces, like how they're reacting. I'm just sort of like doing the gig, playing a song on my own. It's a new song and they sort of
wait a minute,
hear
sorry,
it, and
you're
then,
not debuting the new song in front of them and everyone watching, are you?
Yeah, it feels.
Or is it a sound
preferable.
Check?
Like, no. It wouldn't work in the sound check. I'd feel too stressed. And
you just start playing a brand new song that no one in the whole room has heard, and you're like, you guys on stage, you follow me.
Well, no, they wouldn't play along. It would be like one of the songs in the sets where I like play a song on my own.
Okay.
So they'll just like have a break, and I'll play the song, and,
oh,
then,
I see.
And they'll hear it. And then eventually, yeah, it's quite a sort of weird sort of passive smoking approach to like sharing songs, but like,
well, it seems, but yeah, it seems to me that you value your autonomy as well.
Yeah there's that, but also I'm just really, I'm a chicken, it really scares me playing them new songs, so doing it during a gig feels safer for some reason.
Yeah. Okay. You also worked with a producer on this record. Had you worked with him before?
No, I'd sung a bit on Griff's album. Like, he had been in France recording, and so he'd asked me to come and do a bit of singing, and then we've sort of crossed paths at festivals and gigs where we've both been playing and stuff. But mainly, I'm just a really big fan of his and thought it would be really, like, that is someone I'd want to spend time in a studio with, like the human side is quite important to me. Like, I don't like, you've got to like hanging out with a person.
So you knew him socially more than you did?
Not very much, but I knew that I was gonna like him.
Right.
Like, I knew that he was a lovely guy and it would just be a nice connection to make. And I love his songwriting and his music, And I just thought, this is going to be a good person. And I knew that it would work with the band as well, because you don't want to choose someone that's going to rub them up the wrong way. They just love him to bits. He was really great at like communicating and listening and guiding, and it was really great.
And he's also from England, right?
He's from Wales.
He's from Wales. Okay. Yeah. So, and you're both living in Paris?
No, he actually still lives in Wales.
Oh, okay.
But he was in France working on his album. He'd like did it with a French engineer, recorded it in Paris, and so he was there.
Oh, he happened to be
that.
There.
Yeah.
And how long have you been there?
Sort of 18 years.
Oh, a long time.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was a relatively new development.
No, that's fine. No need to apologize.
I thought of when I read about you living in Paris and being English, I believe, yes. I thought of the Rolling Stones and Exile on Main Street.
Did they live in Paris?
There was a whole tax exile situation in the late 60s and 70s. The Beatles song Taxman is about the tax stuff. These guys became wealthy millionaires and then realized, what the hell? I said this to my wife. She's like, they sound selfish.
They sound like Amazon.
yeah, exactly. They're like finding these tax havens. But Exile on Main Street, I think, as I recall, is a reference to them being tax exiles.
Right.
And trying to get out of the tax code. This is a really random tangent. When I heard an English person moving to... She brought it up, my wife, and I said, you know what it reminds me of? And I assume there are other... You didn't...
I'm not clever enough to do that sort of thing.
What brought you to France?
Just having a look. Okay. I'd been... You know, it's somewhere that I've gone regularly throughout my life, either on holiday as a kid or just like, you know, visiting friends or sisters or whatever who have lived in Paris at different times. And then me and Jesse just decided to go and have a look, and we still live there now.
We still live there now.
Yeah.
Okay. How's your French?
It's all right. You have to ask Lucien. He'll be able to tell you how my French
Lucien's French?
Lucien's French, yeah. Okay.
So when you ponder, we've talked also about all sorts of things in a way. I don't know that I actually cracked the code. I told you my theory about this album.
What, the dogs and babies theory?
The dogs and babies theory is one thing. Yeah, that's one thing. And then there's the music and how hypnotic that is.
Oh, yeah.
You seem reluctant to divulge too much because you don't want to give it away.
I don't want to spoon feed people stuff. Yeah. And I also feel like, I appreciate, like, the things that I like, the writers or music or songs or whatever that I like, is the stuff that feels like you can find a connection, like a personal connection that feels quite magic. And when it feels too, like, spelled out and spoon fed, it doesn't feel like that anymore. It just feels like this is the blanket. One mono sort of tone story in this song, and everyone has to interpret it this way. I just feel like it's nice when people, you know, get it through the prism of their own experience.
So you're dropping little, I don't think you think of them as hints,
but
you're dropping little allusions to The Simpsons,
right? Yeah,
Pride and Prejudice. So it's up to us then to sort of find the little Easter eggs, I think.
Yeah.
You mentioned just now some writers you admire. We're speaking in
2024,
can you just sort of elaborate upon that? Who are some writers who write in this sort of enigmatic style, I suppose?
Well, I don't feel like... I mean, I don't know if I'd call it enigmatic. Not all the time, anyway.
Hmm.
But she's definitely got potential to be enigmatic. But Ursula Le Guin is just one of my hugest heroes.
Okay.
And that is one of the things I love most about her writing, is she doesn't over-explain or spoon-feed you stuff. She was really good at just letting you get there yourself, and that's so much more rewarding and satisfying to like join up the dots and realize what she's talking about in your own time, rather than it just feels really sort of clumsy when they're obviously like shoving in that sentence because they want to explain to you. You know, it's sort of, it's like when you're listening to a radio play and they've got to explain what's going on all the time because obviously you can't see what's happening.
Right.
It's just sort of a bit forced, and it's less rewarding than when you can work it out for yourself.
Just so people recognize this, like, I appreciate what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I appreciate how, you know, there's an artfulness to making something, and it's open to interpretation. Like, that's just how you have to live, because, I don't know.
That's just life. That's the world.
Yeah, you can't talk to... I'm fortunate. I'm here with you. You can tell... If I ask you direct questions, you may or may not answer them, but most people don't. They just have the songs to live with and think about.
Yeah, yeah.
However, you did something that not everyone does. You provided a kind of track-by-track... sort of breakdown. I'm opening it here not to look at anything in particular, but I found this rather rewarding.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And I appreciated it.
Oh, well, I'm glad.
But And this is not a trial. I'm not trying to call you as be a hypocrite or nothing.
Yeah, go for it.
This is interesting.
Do like, I contradict myself?
For someone who wants to be like, you, I made a thing, you live with it.
Yeah.
What prompted you to do a kind of track by track?
The record label tell me to do it.
They tell you to do it, but yeah. Couldn't you have said, because even, but by the way, I should also say, artful track by track. They're okay. Almost like poems.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, I mean, the thing is, when people ask me to sort of explain songs, I get in a total tangle because for me, the song is me explaining those ideas.
Right.
And so then to explain the explaining, I sort of start bugging out and not knowing what to say. And all I can do is sort of write lists. I can't. And I guess the way I write songs as well, I've never been very good at like paragraphs or essays or like forming sentences in a sort of, you know, newspaper way or whatever.
Yeah.
So this is kind of how I can do it, and so I try and do it to the best of my ability, but it's true that it's true I could say no, but I don't like being the difficult person.
No,
I don't like being the difficult team member. Everyone's like trying really hard to make something work, and then I'm just going, I'm not gonna do that.
The fact that you did it so artfully in itself, like it is both illuminating but not at the same time.
Yeah. And then once I am doing it, I do sort of think, oh yes, this is a useful little reflection exercise. Like I do end up finding stuff out about my songs.
Okay, so there's a little clue. Mm-hmm. This is what we haven't maybe got to.
Okay.
Because you've had time. You've had time to play the songs. You've had time to talk to people like me.
Mm-hmm.
And you've mentioned a few earlier were like, yeah, I remember learning some things at the time.
Yeah.
As we're speaking now, what is this record saying about you in a way that surprised you about yourself? That's what I'm wondering. Because
This might be a long silence that you're going to have to edit out.
That's fine. I can fill any silence. Those who listen to my show regularly know I am not afraid to fill a silence. But
so surprising me about myself.
Or things you've learned as you play these songs every night about the songs. Because they are you. These songs are an extension of you. So
can I have a little look at
my notes?
Yes,
you should look at your notes. Yeah, they're somewhere at the back there. I'm just curious. This is getting a little meta now. I happen to print off. I have a printer, everyone. I'm old and my kids need printing sometimes. So
yeah,
I
love printers.
I'm not going to look at these as I speak to Kate, but I'll have them on hand as a security blanket.
And look how useful it is, because now I'm having a quick scan over. And I think the most thing about this album is what I was saying about the Gestalt theory of paradoxical change, just that change will happen whatever, and nothing changes, and then in it not changing, it changes. Like just that sort of impossible diagram of things being the same as they always were and probably will stay the same, but they've completely changed. But they haven't, but they have.
You mean like a child or a dog who start out as one thing and change quite a bit, but also are kind of the same.
Well, maybe through your prism of child and dog experience.
I'm sorry. I don't even have a dog. I've never owned a dog. I had a cat. I miss my cat, Gary. He died.
Oh, Gary.
But yeah, there is something about these animals that we keep.
Yeah.
You know, if you're lucky, you get them as a puppy and they grow and then they stop. They stop growing pretty quickly. Within like a few months, they're like, that's who you are until you're gone.
Yeah.
Whereas a baby grows into a child and...
We're just still at it now. We just don't stop. We just relentlessly grow.
We evolve and we grow, but they are kind of the same. It's exactly what you just said as I think about my children. Yeah, that's the same person they were when they were born. But they're changing a little bit.
Yeah, and they're just sort of unfolding and like branches growing out and stuff.
But every day is sort of repetitive and every day their body is growing a little bit.
I mean, that's the human experience, isn't it?
And I think that's what's happening in your
song. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it's the old human experience.
Yeah.
Again.
So as a mother, and again, I don't mean to voice too much. What I was really trying to get to is you're in France. You're a mother.
Yeah.
You're on tour. You're a musician.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if all of the external sort of factors in your house, in your life rather, and in your house are informing these songs. I'm not asking you to tell me what they're about, but they're all kind of there, aren't they?
I mean, I don't see how it can't inform. Like life just will always inform what comes out of you in a creative sort of way.
But maybe not conceptually. Like under one, it seems to me that these songs go where they go and you don't really know.
I mean... sometimes I think about this. I think about writing out the lyrics on a big bit of paper, probably A1 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, for each line, getting a different colour pen and then, like, explaining a little bit about the image or the idea behind that line.
For yourself?
For myself, but also that's the only, that's another way that I think I would be able to explain the songs, because otherwise I don't manage it.
Yeah.
I think I'd sort of need a sort of big whiteboard and a visual aid and, like, you know, three different colour pens.
Well, to your earlier point, like, maybe it's not your responsibility to explain songs to the receiver.
I guess so.
But now we're talking about something totally different, where you might want to write something down so you have a better sense of what the songs are about.
Well, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, that's probably actually what I did to do those song by song little lists or whatever, track by tracks.
Yeah.
I think there was actually a lot of me looking at my lyrics and writing notes about each line and where it came from and where it was going and stuff. But I just feel like maybe one day I'll do it on a big bit of paper so that other people understand it as well.
So doing that exercise, did that teach you something about these songs?
Well, yeah. I mean, it taught me all this that I wrote, all these lists and things.
Yeah.
I mean, what normally happens, as I can see, just sort of scanning over it, is just there's loads of question marks.
Yes.
It just, you know, the songs just sort of offer up more questions than they do answers, really.
Yeah.
And so that's that, I guess.
So the songs, as we established earlier, the lyrics might emanate from different points in your life. They may not just all be contemporary thoughts.
Yeah.
When were most of these songs written? Was it during this pandemic time?
No. I couldn't write anything during the pandemic.
Okay.
Totally ground to a halt.
Even though this record came out in 2023, the songs predate the pandemic.
Postdate the pandemic.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay.
So, like, yes. Because I had an album that came out bang.
2020, right?
In the pandemic. Like, we finished recording it and everyone went home and then all of the borders shut. And if we'd finished it a day later, we'd all be stuck.
Oh, I see. So these songs were written 2022, 2020.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. 21, 22, probably just 22, actually. What am I talking about? But it's true that, I mean, with the album came out in the pandemic, it was all written in 2019. It was recorded before, you know, everything got clamped down.
Yep.
But there's a lot of stuff in it that people thought was directly about the pandemic. And then with this album as well, there's a few bits and bobs that people think are about the pandemic. Namely, I guess, the song Stuck in a Room. But it just
or
isn't.
Or Doomed or More Doomed.
Exactly, as well. Yeah, that sounds like a bit of a pandemic
one. That's an interesting perspective you would have as someone who speaks to people like me, and they're trying to interpret your lyrics and try to figure out the time and place of them, as I'm doing right now. But I'm kind of stalling, so I have to formulate my question. But when people read a pandemic into your songs, and you're like, it has nothing to do with that. But like you said to me earlier, like, I'm happy that that's what
totally,
you're happy with this.
I'm totally happy with this, because that is their experience, and that is their experience of that song, and that is how they interpret that and me, and that's how that song reaches them.
Yeah.
And also, maybe something happened in the pandemic that did influence that. I mean, definitely I lived through the pandemic, so the person I am now has been altered because of that.
Yeah.
And so inevitably how I write and what I write will be different to if I hadn't lived through that pandemic, but I'm not writing about it.
It's not overt for you. There's no overt reference to this universal experience.
There's no direct one. I mean, I guess that was probably a good observation of you about Doomed or More Doomed, because that wasn't, that's probably the closest one, not because it's not about the pandemic, but it's just about, it started off me thinking about, you know, who's in charge and who makes the decisions and how much power do we have and what have we got to choose from these days? It's like the lesser of two evils all day, every day.
Yeah.
And that is a difficult sort of reality to live in.
Yes. Yeah. So you don't write on tour. Is that what you said earlier?
No, I mean, I sort of note things down, but I don't write songs. I'm never sort of on my own really on tour.
Right.
And I do need that to write.
Since the release of this album, though, which again has been 6-7 months now or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Have you been writing? Have you written songs?
I haven't written any songs. I've been sort of doing some co-writing. Like I've been writing with Lucien's got a really nice project called Hannah Miet, and I did a bit of singing and writing with him, and just some other projects a bit like that, just where people say, can you write some melody and words to this, but haven't done any writing the music myself. Okay. Writing yet.
Because you've been touring.
I've just been on tour, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Is touring different than it used to be in any particular way, like before the pandemic?
Probably, because everything is different all the time.
Yeah. But do you feel it in the room as a performer?
If I do, it's through a sort of heightened sense of we already need this.
Yeah.
And people are really happy to be at gigs, and it's real sort of primary nutrition for everyone, for the musicians and for the audience. Like, and me too, when I'm at gigs that I'm not playing, I'm just like, I really need this. This is great. Yeah. And I didn't realize how much I needed it before, I think.
Well, it's great that you're out there doing this. And
yeah, I feel very lucky.
I hope you have this tour. When does it sort of wind down so you can write?
4th of March.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then
back home. And then there's little bits of touring over the summer. But from September, I've got a hard, cutoff point.
Yes.
And I'm just going to not do
touring
any gigs. Touring hiatus for as long as I can, so I can write as much as I can and just sort of enjoy it and not feel rushed.
Do you write albums conceptually? Ever?
No. I never start off thinking this is going to be the plan. Actually, that might be a slight lie. When I have thought that, it doesn't happen.
Okay.
And other times I don't think that. You know what? I think the more, before an album, if I think this album's going to be a bit themed on this, it never happens. And then if I just think random bunch of songs, see what happens, that's always much more conceptual, or not conceptual, but that's always much more coherent in the end than the one I was planning to make coherent.
Like the song about, the album kicks off with this song, Goodbye Bite, and then as the record continues, we do hear biting and chewing come up.
Yeah, there's loads.
So I know people who write songs end up doing this. They'll write a thing in a random spot on a piece of paper, and then they'll just grab different expressions and words, and then they maybe talking to someone like me, they'll be like, oh yeah, I didn't even, that's not planned. It's just that repetition of things. So
exactly, you can't plan it. And also it feels wrong. I guess there's a certain amount of editing out you can do, but sometimes I think with this album I was just like, no, I'm just gonna leave it in. That's what came out, and that's what I'll leave in.
Okay, so we don't exactly know what's next, except you've got this touring and then you're gonna sit down and write at this point. Okay.
Yeah.
If people want to learn more about this, is the kit, using their telephones and computers,
here's my number.
Where would you like to direct them online?
Well, wherever they like, really. I mean, we're in all the usual places.
Do you person your own social media platforms? Are you in charge?
Sort of a joint effort with me and my management, because I'm sort of not as organized and on the ball with sort of announcing dates and things like that. I'll quite often miss an important thing.
Yeah.
But then I do, you know, I try and sort of make it. I try and enjoy it. Do you know,
when you're on the road, it feels like there's things happening.
Yeah.
And like, hey,
it feels like
thing.
Flicking through a magazine. So I'll sort of flick through, and then I'll sort of put something that interests me, or something that upsets me, or something that at the moment it's a lot of upset. And
oh, I'm sorry.
But
well, I guess
there's a lot to be upset about. It's pretty.
Well, this is again why I was asking how the world gets reflected in your work. And it sounds like you don't even know. Like this period we're in right now, with everything terrible that's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit worried about the writing that I'm going to do next, because it's going to be, because I can feel all of this is sort of, it's so physical, it feels like, at the moment, the sort of distress and
it's visceral
dystopia that's happening at the moment, and the sort of utter despair for the future and how much worse it could get.
Yeah,
I don't know. What'd you do with that?
I don't know. The only thing I will say is that I personally, and probably selfishly, even though I share this show with, you know, thousands and thousands of people, like this, it means a lot to me that people like you continue to make things and make me feel things about those things.
Yeah, I think we do all need to keep making things and keep feeling things.
Yeah.
But we also need to sort of not be scared to speak out about stuff. And then not mind if someone disagrees.
Yeah.
But it's really hard, because you feel so sort of, your hands are tied and you can't, no one's listening. No one's sort of like there's so much noise, everyone's sort of shouting at each other. And then the people that are supposedly sort of you've elected to sort of represent you and make things better just don't. What? You know, like every time I write to my MP, I just get a message back saying I've been off ill, or like
automated message,
yeah. Or just like a thing, just like, oh, just like a horrible right wing lie comes back, and yeah. I just think, oh wow, this is, I mean, I didn't vote for that MP, so
they might know,
I guess that's why I should,
might,
that's why
they expect, might know like, you're not actually someone,
but
they
some
need
people
to.
Voted for them, and some yeah. people probably want them to, you know, make a difference in the government and demand some decency.
You know, this goes back to the repetition thing we were talking about, because we all end up doing the same things. We all go to protests. We all do this, and we hope we're heard, but we're not. I think, unfortunately, the other part of it, and my wife says this to me, or used to say this to me, I don't do this as much anymore, is like, the more you repeat yourself, the more they're going to tune you out about our kids.
Oh, yeah, with the kid. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's
like,
tricky,
we can't stop
yeah.
fighting. Like, we have to do things. It's just the efficacy.
Yeah.
When it's not there, you get down.
It is tricky. It's relentless and makes you feel like there's no point in anything. But there is a point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel that. And I just want to convey again, thank you for making this music and for spending time with people like me who have loose ideas about what you're on about. And
that's great. Thank you. Thanks for like thinking all this stuff and taking the time to like ask questions.
Well, I'm quite smitten with the record, so it means a lot to get to talk to you about it. We can go out on a song from Careful of Your Keepers, I wonder if you can choose one for us and also tell us why it came to mind.
Okay. Maybe in light of our last bit of chat, maybe I will choose the song Careful of Your Keepers.
Okay.
Because we do need to be careful about the people who are in charge. And we also need to be careful about the people who we have the power to look after. And we have to be careful of the people that we are responsible for and our actions. And we have to keep an eye on the people who are responsible for looking after us, but don't necessarily always look after us.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're also just our own keepers. We're just sort of individual beings out there, sort of.
Well, again, not to bring back the parent-child theory I have, but like, careful of your keepers. I think you're probably getting to the same age as I am, where I'm sorry, I don't know your whole situation, but my parents are getting older.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to be like, and I'm away from them. I moved away from them. So, but when I talk to them, I'm like, oh boy, this is coming.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So it made me think of that too.
Yeah. It makes me think of that as well.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But I don't want it to be a hopeless, you know.
No, it's not hopeless. To me, it's almost a statement. It's a very loving statement.
Yeah.
To be careful. It's not simply careful of your nefarious politician keepers or overlords or whatever. I view it more as you can tell by my trying to find some dogs and children in here. I see there's love in that.
Yeah.
There's love in that and devotion in that. Yeah.
Because there's this kind of, you know, we don't realize sometimes how people have been looking after us. And I think part of this album and especially this song is that realization that these certain people have been looking after you your whole life and you didn't realize, or like maybe take the time to thank them or something.
Yeah. And as you get to a certain point, or you encounter, in my case, if you go through kind of a health crisis with your parents, it really crystallizes how important they are to you. And
yeah, it does.
And after, anyway, I won't get into that. People who know the show know the stories there.
Okay.
Let's go to the title track right now from this wonderful album by This Is The Kit. This is Careful of Your Keepers. Kay, this was an honor and a pleasure. Thank you for making time for me. I hope
you
enjoyed yourself and have a great show tonight. And
thanks very
enjoy
much.
Canada.
Yeah, will do. Thanks for having me. Careful of your keepers, mindful of your healers,
Thanks again to Kate Stables for being on this show. This time, what was it? Is anyone counting besides me? Why am I counting? Why am I counting all the episodes? Do you know why? If anyone knows why I'm counting the episodes, tell me, because I've lost track of why I'm counting. But I'm pretty sure this is episode 841 of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcast. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. You can like or follow Creative Control on various social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky. There's a YouTube channel. Everything you might need to click on or subscribe to or whatever is present in the link tree. So if you see a thing that says follow Vish online, click on that and you can do just that. So thank you very much. Most importantly, though, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain me and my work. There are different tiers where you get different things, and I urge you to check that out. Of course, the $10 American a month tier might seem like a lot of money, but you enter a prize pack draw, monthly prize pack draw for records and other things. And even at the $4 tier, I believe, yeah, the $4 tier and onward, you get episodes before they come out to the general public. Those episodes, by the way, are completely ad and promo free. So there are some perks. And if you'd like a Creative Control t-shirt, just message me on Patreon and I'll get you one while supplies last. Thank you so much. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. All fine independent businesses that provide in-kind support for me and this show. Also want to thank Jim Guthrie. He's an independent business of his own there. You can learn more about Jim and his great music, some of which I use on the show, at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Kate from This Is The Kit. That really was my first in-person interview in about 4 years. I've tried. There's been a couple of things booked and then people get sick and they can't do it. I think there's been three or four of those over this time period. And then I did do a live event with Caden Swip and Rolly Pemberton for a book launch he did in Edmonton. But yeah, that's it. I know this because my gear that I bring when I go out into the field has just been collecting dust, kind of. And it was nice to break it out and talk to Kate, and she's lovely, and this band is lovely, and this record's lovely. So check out This Is The Kit if you're not familiar with them, and please follow and subscribe to the show and leave a nice rating and review. That seems to be helping give the show some more visibility on all the pod platform things. So if you can do that, that would be great. Otherwise, I will talk to you soon. Thank you so much. Bye for now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.